Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are, what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. Couple of weeks now after the end of the season, and the dust has settled. George and Andy have got their hankies on their heads, looking a bit pink, and waiting for it all to start again. How are you both?
Enjoying the Schadenfreude from say it's very churlish of me, but I was delighted they lost. I suddenly thought, if they'd won, what if they, you know, if PSG hadn't got the penalty and they'd won that game 1-0, what would that have said about football? I mean, it wasn't, you know, the game didn't say anything either,
No.
but that was because of Arsenal. But I was sort of in the end, although I hate those penalty shootout things, and it's awful for whoever the people are who make a bollocks of it, like, you know, they did. I was glad PSG won. There's something so negative and spoily about Arsenal that it's very hard to be fond of them. And I was thrilled for Crystal Palace, who I watched and played really well, and I was thrilled for Aston Villa as well.
Yeah, both of them went about their finals in a positive mindset. We've come here. We've not just come here to make up the numbers and enjoy the day out. We've come here to win and play, and they did, and they won deservedly, both of them. Arsenal, I think, for my money last night, I was very disappointed with the game itself. You know, the Champions League or European Cup final, whatever you want to call it, historically has been like the showpiece game at the end of the season. And that was nothing like a showpiece game for my money. And I thought Arsenal, I actually thought they let themselves down, because having got the lead, and everybody knows that, you know, that they are defensively strong, irrespective of how they go about it, they are defensively strong. And on the night, they clearly had, well, I'm certain they had the best goalie on the pitch of the two. That's no offence to the PSG goalie, but Raya has been class for Arsenal all season. I just think they should have gone for a second goal. I really do think, you know, they got an early lead, which obviously set PSG back a bit. Why didn't they push on? Because I'm sure they could have defended a 2-0 lead. They, you know, won. I just don't think they went about it very positively. I think they thought they could just soak it up and see out the game. I mean, in 90 minutes they'd had four attempts on target and only four attempts on goal and only one on target in a Champions League final. That's appalling. That is an appalling statistic that Mikel Arteta needs to reflect upon, that he took his champions of England up against the champions of France, and only managed four efforts on target in 90 minutes, and sorry, four efforts and only one on target in 90 minutes. That's a shocking statistic, and it's a to me that's an indictment of the way Arsenal go of not that they go about the football, but certainly with the way they've gone about their football for large tracts of this season. When they play, they have been. Some of the times when they have played and they've really put their mind to it and gone out and attacked people, they've been very, very good to watch. But when they go for the 1-0 to the Arsenal result, God, they're boring and tedious.
Well, that's what last night was.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hilarious because I'm watching it with my neighbour Philippe, who's a rugby man, and you know, he's only watching it because there's a French team in it and because it's a chance for us to just sit and have the crack and all that. And you know, just getting into the match, he sits there and he goes, "These are the champions of England, aren't they?" And I go, "Yeah." And then Havertz scores, and I thought the goal was brilliantly taken. And he goes, "Oh, blimey, I wasn't expecting that." And I said to him, "That is the worst thing that could possibly have happened. Nothing could be worse than that." And an hour later, when finally something, the next thing that happened was that they got a pen, you know, Philippe sort of looked at me like I was some sort of the wisest pundit on his sofa. It's drives you mad. There's no joy in them, and it's a shame because. Oh, can you hear the dog howling, guys? The
I heard
dog.
something then.
Can you hear him?
Is he watching a replay of last night?
Oh, no, he just thinks he's been left, so he howls. It's like the hound of the Baskervilles down there. This tiny little dog weeping his heart out. He's bored now. He's gone back to sleep. Sorry about
Perhaps unsurprisingly, I didn't watch the game last night. Frankly, I've got no interest in it. I do find your observations quite interesting, though, because I really suspect that, and we touched on this, I think, a couple of weeks ago. Mikel Arteta doesn't care. He doesn't care whether you find it interesting or not.
No.
He just wants the wins on his CV. And for his own gratification. And I don't think had they won, many Arsenal fans would have cared neither.
Have
Which
done
says
if
something about.
it.
Sorry?
We wouldn't have done if it had been us.
No, and evidenced by the Arsenal fans that I saw after the Tottenham game last week. Because Central London was just full of Tottenham, Arsenal fans. Sorry, last week after the Sunday game, and they were obviously delirious because they'd won the league. Not one of them were thinking about how they'd won the league or in what how attractive their football had might be. And just listening to you both talking there, thinking, well, of course, these days winning the Champions League is not. Just so when we've got an achievement in itself, it's a step onto something else, and that something else is the huge amount of money that the winner now gets from going into the FIFA World Club Cup Championship, which is probably worth, I think for Chelsea it was worth sort of 70, 80, maybe a little bit more million pounds. So whilst that should, from our perspective, that shouldn't be the reason why you perform in the way that you do. Clearly, for the clubs, it is. So it ceases to be an entertainment product at that stage. It's just part of the process of being ultimately as successful and generating as much revenue as you possibly can. For the following season. And I think particularly now, and I think this will come back to change the way the game is played, particularly now that we're moving towards you can only spend a percentage of your revenue on footballing matters, that every pound earned through success on the pitch means that you can spend more next year. Clubs at the top of the league are going to become much more defensive about once they get in a position whereby they think they're going to win the Premier League, they think they're going to qualify for the Champions League, or indeed, if they're in one of the European competitions, they think they're going to win or they're going to get to the final. And particularly with the Champions League, where they've got the entry then into the FIFA World Club Cup Championship, I think clubs are going to be ultra defensive in their approach to these things because of the revenue implications and what that then means for their team the following season, much more so than in the past. And if I was a strategist in a football club at that level, as against the fan or as against somebody who might be thinking, heck, I've got a responsibility to these guys because I'm a custodian of the club and what the club means to the fans, then that's exactly what I'd be thinking.
Pretty good. Yep, hard to argue. But you're right.
Whether that's good for
It's
the.
not good for football as an entertainment business, though, is it?
No, but one might argue that football can be entertaining from time to time and is. Like I know you, for example, you both love watching the Scottish Premiership, and in particular the Old Firm games. And I know just through the communications between the three of us, how much you enjoyed, the lead up to the title, et cetera, et cetera. So it still has its moments, but at the very highest end of the game, it's just become a performance business. It's not an entertainment business. It's a performance business. And in a sense, and this is a bit of a link, I suppose, back to Everton, that's probably
You worry
exactly.
about it. Nowhere near it. Go on. Sorry.
No, that's probably exactly how David Moyes views his role at Everton. His and the club's expectations, and we could argue whether it should be the case, but it probably is the case. It's obviously much lower than Arsenal's or Liverpool's or any of the clubs who are regularly in European football, and indeed some of the mid-table clubs now, like Aston Villa, like Bournemouth, like Brighton, like Crystal Palace. Our expectations are different, but that doesn't mean that we go about the strategy is going to be no different, even if our expectations are different. And I think one of my concerns for the game would be going forward is that whatever level the club is at, they're going to try and maintain, in the first instance, they're going to try and maintain that level because that's the base from which the business is, in a sense, budgeted for. And okay, if they manage to outperform that, great. But the first and major priority is just to reach the level that you're budgeting for. And I think that's what's happened at Everton, and I think that's why David Moyes will be at the club next year.
And
Because
you think that's part of the reason behind why he doesn't understand the frustration of supporters? Because he sees, well, I've done my job.
Yeah, I do actually. I hadn't really thought about it in that context, but I think that's actually a
Well,
very astute observation.
I mean, the rumblings that are going round is that he's looking at slow and steady and stable progression. Well, we've moved up one place in the table this year. So, will one place up the table again next season be acceptable, and the season after that, and the season after that? Because the way it is, it's going to take us nigh on 15 years to under that premise, it would take us 15 nigh on 15 years to being with a chance of being champions of England again.
Well, when
I
he
mean, we
first
probably
got.
are 15 years from being champions of England again, the way the game is at the minute. But I don't see, one moving one place a year as being an acceptable modus operandi. I mean, it's just, falls way short of what I would want from the club. I understand the need for stability and, blah blah blah, but God, it's boring.
George, you were going to come in on something there. I think it's a very good argument, Andy, by the way.
Me too, darling. When Moyes first arrived, how many years did it take him to get us to finish fourth in the league and qualify for the Champions League, European Cup as it was then? I don't see that, although I don't suppose he's changed in very many ways, but I don't see that the man he is now is going to do what he did then again. Because I think it will be slow and steady, because he is slow and steady. And my argument would be that the club needs something of a more vibrant nature than David Moyes at the moment, in the position of this won't work, that doesn't work, change it, make it better. if that's the manager's job, you know.
And George, do you say that because that's just your view of David Moyes, which is probably an accurate one, or do you say it from the perspective of it's actually much more difficult now to get to those positions than it was back in 2004, 2005?
Both Paul, but probably more to do with my belief in his drive and self-belief then. I think he's probably in his head hit a glass ceiling. I mean, you could argue that that's bollocks and he shouldn't think that because he won the Europa League with West Ham, but you've got to take the season overall and the bit of last season when, we were grateful for that steadiness and solid. I'm no longer grateful. Sorry, I want something a bit more positive, a bit more hopeful, a bit more radical.
Here's what I hope is an interesting point, or interesting question. You could argue, given the fact that three English clubs appeared in the three finals of the three European competitions this year, that doing well in Europe is easier than it actually is qualifying for Europe.
Maybe.
Well, possibly, yeah.
And therefore, the real difficulty is actually qualifying for Europe. But then, unfortunately for us, that brings us back to the point whereby we were in a great position to qualify for Europe and failed to do so.
And that, I mean, last season, not last season, just finished, season before, when Crystal Palace qualified, courtesy of winning the FA Cup, nobody was giving them a prayer to beat City in the cup final, and they did. Then, for whatever it was, they got knocked down from the Europa League to the Conference League. They didn't let it affect them. They said, "Well, all right, you're going to knock us down to a different competition. We'll just go out and win that instead." And they went about things positively. Not seeing themselves as an underdog, not seeing themselves as the one with a taking a knife to a gunfight. They went into the gunfight with City and won, and then they got knocked down from the Europa League as FA Cup winners to the Conference League, and they went into that knife fight, into that gunfight with the right attitude, and they've won again. That's what we want to. That's what I want to see. I want to see an end to all that nonsense about knives to gunfights. It's about time we got on the front foot as a club. And not only from the fan base demanding better, but everybody within the club wanting to be better and expecting to be better and doing their damnedest to be better at whatever they do. It's about standards, and I think we've allowed standards to become incredibly low within the club. And I think everybody inside and outside the club that's got any passion for Everton Football Club should be demanding and expecting better from every single person in every single role. I don't want to be happily dissatisfied. What sort of a nonsense statement was that from Mr. Kinnear? That sends the wrong message. If he said we deservedly and rightfully furious or livid, yeah, I'd have gone with that. But happily dissatisfied, I can't think of any person in any walk of life who can be happily dissatisfied. And least of all, 50-odd thousand Everton supporters turning up at Bramley Moor Dock every week. They want to go there. They want to be entertained. They want to see a team playing attractive football and winning more games than they lose, and giving them hope. What footballers? I'll tell you what footballers forgotten in all this chasing of money, As you've just said, Paul, about Arsenal, probably went into that game thinking, well, into that game last night, well, we win this and then we can go on to that World Club Championship. We'll earn another 80, 90 million quid, whatever, whatever, whatever. What they've forgotten in this endless search for more money is the effect that their club, and every club for that matter, has on its community outside of the stadium. And I mean the fan bases. And it doesn't matter whether you're Arsenal as champions of England, you know, whether you're City as cup winners, or whether you're Hartlepool United, you've got a set of people within your local community, and obviously the bigger clubs in a much wider community, whose whole I'm going to say it is literally whose whole week revolves around what happens at 3 o'clock on a, or historically at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. And if the clubs are more bothered about money than actually putting on a show for those people who've downed tools for 90 minutes to go to a game of football, and they don't realise that that game of football, the result of that game of football, or the manner in which that team plays in that game of football, can have such a positive effect upon that crowd and upon that community, then I give up. You know, 50,000 people at Bramley Moor Dock and Everton get beat. Do you think any of them are going home happy? Do you think any of them are going home looking forward to getting home and the missus turning around and saying, "Oh, how did you go on? Well, we got beat again." You want to go home happy. You want to be able to go into work on Monday and have the crack with the guys in work and what have you about, you know, "Oh, it's great on Saturday. You know, we took Chelsea on and tonked them 3-0. It's brilliant." And that was back in March. You know, Evertonians and fans of other clubs are now going into the summer, you know, on the back of disappointing results. And Sunderland fans aren't. They're looking forward to it. They're having a whale of a time getting ready to go into Europe next year. And that, I think football's forgotten its place within society in as much as it can be an enormous meat injection for people. People, you know, people are going to work on a Monday happy after the weekend when their football club has won, or at least they've played well, even if they've not won, at least they've played. You know, "God, we played well, but we were unlucky, we got beat." Whatever. People work harder on that Monday morning when they're at work. And I think football has lost its way in respect of the effect that it has on the community. And I just think that somebody within football needs to get their head out of their ass and realise that, yes, the money's important, but by God, if they put in the money above absolutely everything else, particularly the entertainment value and the relief value for the people who go to the games, because it's a relief to get away from work and all the other issues in life that bear down on us. Football is supposed to be a way of, or your Saturday afternoon, whether it's rugby, football, or cricket in the summer, or whatever. That's where you forget about all the mundane things in life and you look forward to 90 minutes of screaming your head off and having a laugh with your mates and whatever, and hopefully celebrating a goal and celebrating a win without having to wait 3 minutes for a frigging VAR decision. And football has lost its way for my money. And unfortunately, Everton are epitomising that by being average at everything, mediocre. And it's not acceptable any longer. It really isn't.
So, Andy, again, thanks for that. How do you get that message across to the people who make the decisions that then would create the changes that you're asking for? And I ask that not just from an Everton's perspective. It's quite interesting that Lancashire County Cricket Club, exactly the same thing is going on at the moment, where the members are enormously dissatisfied with the performance of Lancashire County Cricket Club as a cricket club. Second division in the championship, historically one of the three, maybe four big counties in English cricket. Really also runs nowadays in terms of cricketing, despite the fact that they've, in recent, even in recent years, they've produced some of England's finest cricketers, not only of this time, but possibly of all time. And yet the CEO, when the CEO spoke, and this is a divergence, but it's actually relevant. When he spoke this week about the performance of Lancashire County Cricket Club, all he could talk about was the repair of the balance sheet and what the hotel room occupancy rate was. Not a single word about
All about the money, nothing about the sport.
And this is, and the difference between Lancashire County Cricket Club and Everton is that Lancashire County Cricket Club is still owned by the members. They're not owned by an American investor or a private equity company or a private credit company, whatever, whereas Everton are. So the question then is how do we take that message and deliver that message, the message that you're saying, that actually what is really important is how the team not only performs, but how the team plays and how it presents itself and what it offers to the thousands and thousands of people that rely upon Everton as a source of well-being in their lives. How do we take that message and get it to the people that count, and put it in terms whereby they can see what benefits us also benefits them?
Have you got an answer to that question?
I may have. I'm just interested in whether you've got a view just off the top of your head.
I'd love to say yes, Paul, but I don't think I have at the minute.
Okay, I mean, it's slightly unfair of me to throw the question at you.
No, it's well.
Don't think so. Because it's an important question, isn't it? Otherwise, we're all helpless all the time. I'd love to feel as though there was something I could do actively.
It's very difficult to think of what anybody can do actively, whether you're in the south of France, as you are, George, or indeed whether you live above the Bramley Moor pub. It is really difficult. But I think, given that football has lost its core reason for being, because we've now got institutional investors, because we've got wealthy investors, because we've got state investors who are doing their investments in football for a whole raft of different reasons, none of which is anything to do, or very little of which is to do with the good of the game. It's for their own purposes, whatever those purposes are. The only real custodians of the game that remain, and I'm just throwing this out because it's the end of the season and it's a good time to think about these things. The only true custodians of the game that are left
For
are
the
the fan
fans,
base. And the question for all of us as fans is, do we allow the game to be continue to be taken further away from us? Or do we individually and collectively, club by club, all together, turn around to the powers that be, both at club level, league level, regulatory level, and say, actually, guys, enough is enough. This is the reason why football exists. This is the reason why culturally football is by far and away the biggest cultural asset in our country. I mean, people in music might argue differently. People in your profession, George, might argue differently. But I think it's generally recognized that it is. And you're not meeting our needs. You're not satisfying our needs now. But more importantly, what about the people who come down the road as fans in 20 years' time? Where are they all coming from if you're not meeting the core needs that football has met in fan bases and in communities and in cities for more than 100 years? Because the only reason why football is so popular and such a cultural expression of both individuals and their cities is because it's met a need that couldn't be met anywhere else. And if football stops and fails to continue to meet that need, then football becomes no more relevant than going to the cinema or going to the theatre from time to time or going to your favourite restaurant if you're fortunate enough to be in a position where you can do so. Football's importance to us all is because football gives us back so much, or can give us back so much, if it's played in the right way and if clubs respond in the right way and if the relationship between the fan base and the clubs is conducted in the right manner. Take away any of those ingredients, and then we are then just competing with computer screens, with mobile phones, cinemas, theatres, and any other form of entertainment that might exist. And I think that's a core message that needs to go back to all of the people who are the investors, the board members, and the executives of football clubs. Not only do you have, and one might argue, you have a moral responsibility to maintain that linkage and to grow that relationship and to grow that value for historic cultural reasons, but actually, the clubs that actually really do that are the ones that are going to be successful long term, because it will cease to be just about how much money you can raise, how much money you can spend, and therefore that implicates on or affects performance. It will be something that's much more meaningful than that, and something that money itself can't buy.
Community.
And not only community, but actually, making your football club a product that not only existing fans are happy to follow, support, and engage with, but where you actually grow the fan base and where you bring young people in.
Future generations.
Everton have got one of the oldest fan bases in the Premier League. And if you look at like the away support, there's an awful lot of old. With the greatest of respect, there's an awful lot of older people that go to the away games. There's a lot of kids that go, and a number of youth that go as well. But if football continues to be A, really expensive, B, really difficult to get to because of fixture changes at the last minute, et cetera, and then what you actually see as a product on the pitch isn't very attractive, and then not only is it not very attractive, your particular club has never got a chance of winning anything significant, or is unlikely to win anything significant unless you've got really clever owners or a really brilliant manager, as was the case with Bournemouth and Crystal Palace, for example. Genuinely, what are the prospects for your football club? You can build a brand new shiny stadium on the banks of the River Mersey, at some point, people are going to realize that the emperor's got no clothes. And it ceases to become a thing that actually is as significant and could be even be more significant than it is and has been in the past.
I don't want to sound as though I'm going against what I said a few minutes ago, but
We never do that, Andy.
no, but I'm just thinking back to something that the club put out the other day, that they've had a 97% take up of season ticket renewals for next season. And someone within the club, or someone within any club that has that level of season ticket renewals, will probably say, well, we don't have to change very much. Look, we've got 50,000 Evertonians or whichever club you support, you know, and 49,500 of them are coming back irrespective. I don't know. I'm lost with football. I really am.
I think that's really interesting, Andy.
Well,
If you don't mind me
cutting
across here.
I'm just going to expand it a little bit
Yeah,
more
go
as
on.
Well. Is when Bramley Moor was first muted, I would venture to say, and I can't justify, I can't qualify this really, but lots and lots and lots of Evertonians wanted the new stadium to be 60,000 capacity, and the magical figure that went around was 61,878. Yeah, 1878 with 60,000 in front of it. And Mr. Mice, who designed Bramley Moor, obviously working within budgetary restrictions imposed upon him by Messrs. Mashiri and Barrett-Baxendale and Ken Wright and anybody else who was involved in it, chose otherwise and made it smaller. And on the grounds that there were reasons like the last X number of thousand seats were the most expensive to build. And if you limit availability, you guarantee full stadiums, and you're not going to look bad on telly with empty seats, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, make it not the hottest ticket in town, but the hardest ticket in town to get. And I think that's wrong. If you limit availability of something just in order to be able to jack up the price, because that's what it's come down to now. You know, Everton have expanded from Goodison at, you know, a little under 40,000 to 50,000, allowing for 3,000 visitors, you know, in a 52,888 stadium. Call it 50,000 Blues. There's 10,000 more going to the game, but they're paying a lot more for it, and they're going to pay more for it again next season. And some of them who've joined, you know, to get all the benefits, you have to join this Everton membership, which is another, I don't know, 60-odd quid a year. And if you've not used all the benefits, in inverted commas, of that this season, they don't run them forward into next season. It has to start all over again. And it's all about the money. I just get the impression that clubs, I'll use the word clubs rather than just stick with Everton, because I'm sure Everton are not on their own in this, that other clubs are just milking the fan base for as much as they can, as often as they can. And until the fan base or football supporters nationally, maybe even globally, actually dig their heels in and say, no, enough is enough.
How can they say that?
Well, the ultimate sanction, and this used to work in the days before you had to have a season ticket to be able to get to a game, was you voted with your feet. If you are watching crap week in, week out, you stop going. And crowds plummeted. And maybe if you were on telly, it didn't look good that there were gaps in the terraces, whatnot. I don't think the clubs actually give a rat's ass about whether there's gaps in the stands nowadays, because they've already had the money, because the seats have been sold by season ticket. So they don't care if the fans turn up or not. They've had the money.
So then the fans have no power.
Well, there has to be, to me, I think there has to be a way of the fans recovering that power, recovering that the pressure of numbers, if you like, and maybe one fan base can't do it individually. Maybe it has to be a national drive, you know, the National Footballers or Football Supporters Association or whatever, a movement of all the fan bases about escalating costs and being abused by, and we are, and the fans are abused by the footballing authorities. And the most obvious one is the constant changing of fixtures without any regard for people's travelling arrangements, people who bought tickets in advance who are flying in from Ireland or Norway or wherever they're coming from, supporters groups who are flying in from the US to visit, to watch their chosen club, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Everton, it could be anyone. And they've made all their arrangements for a Saturday, 3 o'clock, and all of a sudden it's moved to Monday at 8 o'clock. There's no regard for supporters at all. And there has to come a point, to my mind, where nationally, internationally, globally, however, football supporters say, no, you either start listening to us and start paying attention to us and what we want, rather than just what this handful of owners, who, as Paul said, may not, are not in it for the game, they're in it for whatever financial purposes suits them best. You know, that...
Andy, I agree with all of that. My argument would be that a really clever business person who's involved with football recognises, like they do in every other business in the world, or successful business in the world, the value of the relationship between them and the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Call fans a customer for a couple of minutes.
That's how we're treated.
In business terms, that's what they are.
Yeah.
How much more valuable would your club be if it was recognised as being the club that, notwithstanding sometimes the difficulties in terms of relationships with the broadcasters, that looked after its fans better than anybody else and acted in the fans' interests as much as it possibly can? Notwithstanding the fact that they're wanting to be a competitive football club and they've got budgets and everything else, but actually came out and said, you know what, yes, we want to be the best football club we can be, and then let's define what the best football club we can be is. Well, it means obviously performing to the highest levels on the pitch, it means having a great academy, it means doing all the wonderful stuff that we do around the city, which Everton obviously do in terms of community work. It means being, you know, one of the leading advocates for football, for good governance and everything else in the Premier League. But more than anything else, it means actually having a real and valuable relationship with the local fan base. We represent our city and we represent the people of the city. And as a result of that, we become more attractive to sponsors, we become more attractive to commercial partners, and we're seen as something that's very different from everybody else. Why can't somebody have the courage to stand up and say that and do it? And if they can't, or if they won't, or they just haven't thought about it, then we as a fan base, we have to put that to them and say, this is the way to differentiate Everton Football Club from everybody else. Because currently what we've got is a form of self-congratulatory mode. 97% of fans must be happy with what they've got because they've bought the product again.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that you've bought the product again doesn't mean that you're happy with it. You've got two choices when you follow a football club. You either buy the ticket and you go to the game, or you buy the season ticket and you go to as many games as you can during the season, or you don't. It's got nothing to do with whether you're satisfied with what you're seeing and the product that you're being offered. It's got nothing to do with that at all. So the club, as was David Moyes actually, is confusing what they offer with how the fans think about what they offer. So David Moyes saying, he couldn't understand the fans' disappointment, because he can rattle off a load of statistics that say, actually, we outperformed what our expectations were. We were second in defensive pressures. We had the sixth highest clearances in the league. Blah, 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 blah. I can think of loads of other things. We conceded seven goals less than what was expected. We've got the best goalkeeper in the world. Whole raft of things, measurements that he could present as to say that he and the club and the players have done a magnificent job this season. Nobody who saw Everton for any more than maybe one or two games would believe that. The evidence is there in front of everybody. Yet the club chooses to ignore that, and in the case
You've got.
this week with regards to season ticket renewals, everything's fine because 97% of the fans have bought our product again. That's if you want to run a business like that, then you're gonna at some point you're gonna hit a brick wall. And everybody knows what happens when that happens. There's a thing that the what do you call it, the FSA are running, and it's I don't know a huge amount about it, but it's the headline is "Don't exploit loyalty," and
Right.
that's exactly what football clubs do. They exploit the loyalty of the fan base, and my argument, as against just being negative about what the club are doing, would be turn that around, invest in the loyalty of the fan base, and you have a much better club. You have fans having a much better experience, and as a result, if you're the investor, you have a much more valuable investment going forward. Somebody needs to present that argument, and that's the club will also argue that it's never been easier to engage with the club than it is now.
Right.
Because we've got, the fan advisory board, we've got the fans forum, we've got the world's oldest shareholder association for a football
Right.
club. There's never been more formal processes by which people can engage with the club. You can get the CEO's email address very, very easily if you're so minded, and fire off an email to him. You won't necessarily get a response, and I'm not blaming him as an individual for that. But the club will argue that it's ever been easier to express your views. Social media is there and everything else, and they monitor everything on social media. So they know what fans are thinking. They just choose to ignore it. And I think that's a really short,
It's very short-sighted.
very
It's short-term.
short-sighted
It's potentially very short-term.
business strategy. Particularly in an environment where we all as football fans know that the competitive environment for our football club is only going to get more difficult, not easier. And if we don't see evidence of how we improve our offering, then that gets more difficult again.
Going off on a slight tangent,
Go on.
and I'm just thinking about fixture scheduling. How difficult or would it be impossible for any club in the Premier League to turn round to the Premier League and the broadcasters and say, no, we are not playing home games at silly o'clock on different nights of the week. All our home games are going to be Saturday, 3 p.m. End of story. How difficult or is it impossible for any club in the Premier League to say that and actually put it into action?
Yeah, I mean, contractually, they just can't do that. So bearing in mind that most of the club's revenue comes through its contractual agreements with the Premier League in terms of TV revenues, both domestic and overseas, no club's ever going to do that, because once they do that, they break the terms of the contract, and effectively, they can wave goodbye to their TV revenues.
Which means that they'd have to replace those revenues by doing something else rather than just
No,
taking.
it means they've got thrown out of the Premier League, because it will be a breach of the Premier League rules. Because if you look at the Premier League handbook, there's a very clearly defined obligation to meet the league and the broadcaster's requirements in terms of when a match is played. And if you refuse to play a match on a Monday because you've already played seven times on a Monday, then you're in breach of the rules, and we all know what happens. You either get a massive fine, or increasingly, I mean, it wouldn't be a sporting advantage on this, but you'd get penalised. No club's going to do that. And they wouldn't get any favour from any other club, because it's effectively a collective arrangement. The strength of the Premier League's offering from a broadcaster's point of view is that they have total control on who plays, and at what time they play, and who is, who can view the match. The Premier League sold its control to the broadcasters in return for more money. And the fact now that, even more games are now shown live domestically means that unless a 3 o'clock Saturday window is the ban on that is removed, it can't happen. I mean, it just cannot happen, full stop. Unless you want to throw out the whole business model and say, you know what, we're going to do it differently. And none of the owners would ever even dream of doing it.
Then, to address your question of earlier, Andy, which was how can fans affect change? I think I feel I wish I wasn't saying this, but I feel it's pie in the sky to expect a global movement. Or a national movement of fans. Although, if you could find the forum, I'm damn certain you'd find bags of agreement between fans of every single club on various subjects like VAR, time wasting, cheating, shirt pulling, wrestling, all that stuff. But how you'd organise that, I don't know. So the answer is that somebody has to set an example, and I would say, and it pains me to raise this. But the most obvious and most hideous to watch chasm that exists for us as Evertonians is not, like me and Andy mither on about United, but it's not about United, it's about Liverpool, who had a shocking season for lots of, sad and understandable reasons. But they still finished in the Champions League and they've sacked the man who seemingly lost the dressing room, whatever. I'm not interested in the ins and outs of slot, but they've sacked him to replace him. And it feels from all the gossip they're going to replace him with the person everybody wanted, the Bournemouth manager, Iriola. And what are we doing, having finished one position above and collapsed in the last seven games and not made a run for Europe when we thought we'd done? We are standing still. Nothing could be more crushing for the fan base that, I used to be a physical part of when I lived in Liverpool, than that those actions over this week. They've acted, we haven't. Their problem, in their view, was greater than whatever view was taken of our problem. So if I can tie these two things together, I'm not sure I can. It seems to me that the only power a fan base has is, as you said, to say no more. But that means even though you paid for the season ticket, you don't go. And that is such a story that if you can get the story correct and what's your phrase, and run the narrative, you know, being
Yeah,
controlled,
control the narrative, yeah.
you control the narrative and people go, well, why didn't you all come? And you bigger, and then there's a very clear agenda that goes, we are dissatisfied with this, this, and this. But it can only be within our club. You can't go, we don't like VAR, so we're not going to watch Everton. It has to be more personal than that. And when so when Paul says, and I don't disagree with him, the custodians of the club are the fan base has to step up and take that responsibility if that's the case. Because I don't see any great signs of responsibility to Everton Football Club and what it means to me and you, and we presume some people who are listening to us, from the powers that be at Everton at the moment. And I hope in a week's time we're all going, whoa, we got that wrong. But this is Everton. I'm not sure we will say that.
No.
It's back to the, you know, what the thing that Paul just said about, I forgot, I'm sorry. I've lost my own thread down.
That's
Sorry.
okay, George. Most people forget what I've said instantly, so don't worry about it.
I was saying in the middle of saying it, this is a bit alarming. What comes of watching Arsenal?
Indeed. Well, that's probably a good point to stop, actually. And we can gather our thoughts for next time and remember what we said, if indeed that's possible. You'd have to go back and listen to the podcast now, George, and work out what it was that you're going to say and remember it
Hang on,
sufficiently to say it next
don't
week.
say it too loud. People will twig that this is why we stumble around, so they have to listen.
I think by now, Andy, after
It's cottoned on.
however many podcasts it is, people realize that there's not much structure behind this. There's a lot of passion.
When does the transfer window open?
No idea, George. Why are you looking to move to a different podcast?
No, I was thinking about when the bad news starts to roll in about
Oh, no.
him.
I have no idea. And look, there's a World Cup coming up, so
That's not going to distract me.
no, I
I'm not
know, but
going
it's going to distract everybody. I had to write an article for some journal, and they asked me to write it this weekend so that they could get it out before everything was obliterated by the World Cup coverage. Domestic football is going to go on the back seat for several weeks now.
Good. Well, it could do with a holiday, couldn't it?
Yeah. Except we're all going to be like looking at the squad and thinking, when are we going to make a move for a left back? When are we going to make a move for a right back? We need another central defender. We can't go into another season with Beto and Barry as our only attacking options.
Are we going to sign Tyrique George? Is anybody going to be, is Grealish going back to City? Is Grealish staying? Is he staying? Is he going? The really frustrating thing is that, and I sense this the last couple of days talking to fellow Blues, is that there are Blues out there who are resigning themselves to the fact that we will do, or we are likely to do, precious little in the transfer market, maybe even until after the World Cup has finished. And if that's the case, and other clubs make their moves a lot earlier and a lot more decisively, that's going to be another I don't quite know how to term it, but it's going to make people even more frustrated that once again we'll go into a transfer market or a transfer window and act slowly. And then we'll come round to the start of the season in August, September time, whenever the new season kicks off, middle of August probably. And if we get off to a slow start, as certainly under Moyes habitually we have done, the levels of frustration are just going to go up and up and up.
I think it's just small beer, Andy. I think the question has been demonstrated by Liverpool.
Oh yeah, they've been decisive.
Yes, but where have they acted? They've acted on the manager. They've acted on the person who affects the players. Us talking about the players and will we keep? Will we save? It's all chaff and
wind. Well, the other thing is that they've read the room. They've read the room of their fan base. And lots of the Liverpool fan base have been fed up with Arne Slot for months. And they've obviously heeded the rumblings from the terraces and the rumblings from the forums and the rumblings from the supporter groups like Spirit of Shankly and what have you, and thought, yeah. And they've looked at the manager and thought, yeah, he hasn't got anything remotely like the, and I hate to say it, the charisma of Klopp, because he did have charisma. So they've outed him and they'll replace him. And if they do, you know, well, it seems to be, it's nailed on that it's going to be Iriola. They're getting a younger manager who, we said it last week, always seems to have a smile on his face, and he'll get them, if he gets them playing the way he got Bournemouth playing, and we go, you know, we've still got Dower Davy, and you know, let's get to 40 points, and we're just sharpening the knife for the gunfight. I'm fed up of being. End it, Paul. Say sayonara. Good night. Thank you. Thanks for listening. We'll come back when we're in a better mood. I don't want to feel like this about Everton Football Club. And I'm fed up of feeling like this about Everton Football Club. I want us to act and be something and be what we used to be.
Andy, I'm sure there's plenty of people listening to us who don't really want to hear us saying half the stuff that we say.
No.
But it has to be said, and in a sense, hopefully it's cathartic. But you're right. You know, we would love to be talking about who are we going to get in Europe next year.
Yeah.
What the best away day is going to be? Is it going to be, going to Lisbon or,
No, don't mention Lisbon. I'm still having therapy for two trips to Lisbon.
A weekend at George's when we, before we play Bordeaux,
Marseille or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, something goes out there, chap. Well, you'd probably end up at mine actually if it was Marseille, but, All right, let's leave it there. I actually think it's been a really interesting conversation. I think when people listen to it, they'll take a lot out of it that perhaps hasn't been said elsewhere. I hope so. Because we're looking for solutions as well as complaining about what's going on. You know, we're trying to be proactive. And I would encourage every single fan to be as proactive as possible in terms of getting their concerns about the club to the club in a constructive manner. And indeed, if anybody would like us to do it on their behalf, well, you can write to me, or you can write to Andy, or you can write to George.
Yeah.
We will happily pass those messages on.
By all means, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, gents, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I think it's a bit cooler than it has been.
Bit cooler, thankfully.
We spent months waiting for the summer to arrive. It arrives and we all of a sudden wanted to go. So let's not.
I don't want it to go. I just don't want it to be as blistering hot as it was last Saturday and Sunday. It was ridiculous. God,
you're a real Goldilocks, you are. It's too hot. It's too cold. I'm only teasing you, Andy.
But
Right, George.
I can easily be offended, you know.
George, is there anything you want to add before this descends into complete farce?
Revolution. I'm in a cul-de-sac shouting, "Moy's out, Moy's out, Moy's out." Fetched fondly. Cheers, Dave. All the best. Next, next. Something new.
Right.
Something. Some energy, please.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's your message back to the club. I'll make sure they get it.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, guys. Great fun as
Cheers,
always.
Paul. Thanks
Cheers.
for
Thank
listening,
you.
everybody.
You take care, everybody. Rough world out there.